Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmadbhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio. And of course, I'm your host, Atiq Ahmadbhatti. Now, today is actually part two of a two-part special with Jeremy Scher, all the way from Tanzania. And as you're very well aware, Jeremy is the founder not only of the Dynamis School of Advanced Homeopathic Studies in the UK, and that school, by the way, is known across the world, but also over the last 13 years, Jeremy and Camilla Scher have both been working in Tanzania, or should I say, serving the local communities in Tanzania as part of the Homeopathy for Health in Africa initiative. Jeremy, it's great to have you back for part two, and I hope you're well.
Yes, all is good, my friend, and it's nice to be back again.
It's always an honor to have you on the show.
Hello to everyone.
We were talking last time about a number of things, and we spoke about your journey, your fascinating journey to homeopathy, founding the Dynamis School, and the amazing work that you were doing, or you are doing at HHA in Tanzania, serving the local communities with homeopathy, and so many other things. And we also touched upon the need for education and, you know, the importance there about training the locals as far as homeopathy is concerned. And near the end, actually, you mentioned something very important, which was to do with noble gases, namely helium, neon, and argon, as well as krypton. And the fact that you've been working on a series of books on the noble gases and have done undertaken provings for which you are obviously well known in the world of homeopathy or within the homeopathic community. So I was going to ask you, with these gases, where do they fit in today's current climate, and what are the characteristics and what are the uses of helium, neon, argon?
Okay, well, so I'm going to ask you to imagine it and think of a picture of the periodic table, which I'm sure most of you have seen many different periodic tables, but this periodic table is the basis of all life, all things in the universe, all mineral, it's the basis of everything. And to remind you, there are 118 elements, and they are arranged in seven rows, seven periods, which is why it's called the periodic table. They kind of go around periodically. That's the kind of basic structure, and it's a very beautiful structure because there's a lot of logic in it and the way that it, fits together so neatly and explains many things, especially for us homeopaths who have, used a lot of them as remedies. You would all know, sulfur, phosphorus, arsenicum, all these are elements, calcium, whatever. So I became fascinated with the periodic table very early on, back in the early 80s, when I started doing provings and teaching and researching homeopathy. So, and you look at the periodic table, it's built like a kind of rectangle where, you have those seven periods that we mentioned. So now, there are 118 elements, and my thought was that if we prove all of them, it will be a whole world that is proved that can help a lot of people. You know, in fact, you can do nearly anything with that homeopathically. Kent says, if you have the remedies from just one kingdom, you can cure everything, you know, because it's it covers a whole lot of it. So, okay, cool. So, but then I thought, you know, how do we approach this? 118 elements is a lot to prove, more than I can do in my lifetime, although there probably were, you know, let's say 30 or 40 elements proved at that time in the 80s. But so I thought to myself, look, this is a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you do a jigsaw puzzle of 1,000 pieces, you're going to do the sides first, the corners. You'll probably start with the corners, do the sides, and then fill in the middle. Mm. If you start in the middle, you're kind of lost. So I thought, okay, let's do that. I'm going to do the sides and then, you know, later see what I can do in the middle. So that's one aspect of it. And the sides, the edges of the periodic table are on the right side, the noble gases, seven noble gases, one at the end of every period. On the top, you've got the hydrogen and helium, which I proved both of. And at the bottom, you've got the radioactive elements, the seventh period, which I've proved quite a few of. So there you go. I'm going along the lines, just like the jigsaw puzzle. But with the noble gases, there's more to it than that, because the noble gases are, in a way, as a molecular structure, they are perfect, meaning that they have a full house of electrons in their outer shell. That means that they do not need to combine with any other element. In fact, they mostly cannot combine with any other element unless under big pressure. So they are satisfied. They have all they need. Whereas every other element in the periodic table is not satisfied and therefore needs to combine with other elements in order to achieve what they want. So think of it like, you know, you've got a street, and along the street are, let's say, eight houses, and starting from the bottom of the row, they're the poor people, slightly better off people, going up and up the row, till the last house, house number eight, in which the perfect people live. This is a noble gas, they're perfect. And they don't mix with the people in the road. You know, everybody else is mixing, you know, socializing, having affairs, doing commerce, whatever they do, they are mixing because they don't have that perfection. But the noble gas has all it needs. It doesn't have to go out and mix. It doesn't want to, it doesn't need to. So in a way, it's perfect, and there's seven of those, so you can say those are the seven noble ones, the seven samurai of the periodic table. So what I thought is this. First of all, you know, if they are perfect, it would be interesting if you see in approving, does approving bring out perfection, or what are the other sides of perfection? The second thing is, all the other elements, when they combine, meaning every chemical interaction that ever happens is the other elements trying to be like the noble gas. That's what they all want. It's everything. So let's take the simplest molecule, let's say water, which is, as we all know, H2O. So H2, two hydrogens, that's two electrons, and O is eight electrons, and together they are trying to be like the noble gas at the end of the period, which is neon, which is number 10, 8 plus 1 plus 1. Even the most complex molecules are trying to be like a noble gas. Everybody in the street wants to be like the people at the end of the street. The question is, are the people at the end of the street really happy, or satisfied, or bored? You know, what's going on with them? Because they have it all, supposedly, but what happens when you have it all? That's what I wanted to investigate. And the third thing that comes out of that is that if all the other elements want to be like the noble gas, then if you understand the noble gas, you will understand what every other element is striving for. So I set out on this journey in 1993, and the first one I proved was neon. Now, 30 years have gone by exactly, and in that time, I've proved 6 out of the 7 noble gases, which are neon, starts with helium, neon, argon, krypton, xenon, radon, and the last one you cannot get hold of, element 118. In fact, they just managed to manufacture it in a one of those underground particle accelerators a couple of years back, and they gave it the ridiculous name of Oginason. I call it Luciferium because it's the last element. It's the element that is at the end, you know, of creation. So it's been a very, very fascinating, amazing journey. And there are so many secrets to these noble gases that really give us a huge insight into the universe, the periodic tables, our nature as human beings, and nature's nature. And although, you know, proving a remedy takes me a couple of years, maybe sometimes more, but, you know, just to, the proving is the easy bit. That's, you know, 2 months, 3 months, you suffer a bit, sometimes you suffer a lot, and then you know, the collating and editing is a big work. A lot of people, you know, don't get past that stage. But, you see, doing a proving just gives you a lot of symptoms, which is just a long, boring manifesto to read. And approving is not materia medica, really. There's a stage in homeopathy where you take approving and you go through that mental alchemy to understand what makes this proving tick, how it all fits together. And that's a different stage. A lot of people think the proving is a materia medica. It is, but it's materia medica pura. It's not, it's not been processed at all. So now processing these 7 noble gases took me a lot longer. And I worked on helium for, 10 years. Krypton, I've just finished a nearly 9 years journey, not finished yet. Each one of these took me a long time of work to process it and write it out. Now, before I started the journey, I kind of hypothesized, because it's the number 7, I thought to myself, maybe, it's left to be seen, but maybe it relates to all these number 7s in the universe. For instance, 7 colors of the rainbow, 7 notes, in the octave, 7 different notes, 7 chakras, and 7 days of creation in Judeo-Christian Bible. So this was just amusing a theory, but it's unbelievable how much it proved itself in the provings, meaning there's a total correlation between the 7 days of creation, the biblical 7 days, and the noble gases, between the 7 chakras and the noble gases. And what I discovered also, which I hadn't hypothesized about, is there's a total correlation between the physical dimensions and the noble gases, meaning line going on to the 2nd dimension, which is surface, 3rd dimension, which is a sphere, 4th dimension, which is continuous time, and then other forms of time. So, you know, all this is pretty amazing. And it's even more amazing than that, because what you really see when you dig deeply into them, and you know, this is in a way what the books are about, are the evolution of the soul into a body, into a person, and the different phases of a person. So, you know, you can understand from, you know, from looking at helium deeply, very deeply, I got insight into the process of reincarnation that I don't believe anybody's had up till today in history, because I've looked at it, you know, from Blavatsky to, you know, every guru, and read books and all this kind of stuff. Proving gives you more information that has not been around till then. Because helium is that stage where the soul has not yet come into the body. And what do I mean? You know, people in the proving will have that feeling that they've never really come in, that they, you know, one leg in, one leg out. And it could manifest, for instance, this is typical helium, that they have all these amazing thoughts and plans and spiritual meditation, you know, all that kind of side of things. They've got a rich spiritual world, but they are unable to manifest it. So, you know, it could be an architect that has made, you know, 1,000 house plans that are all amazing, but they've never actually built one house. That would be one manifestations. But the provers, without knowing what the remedy was, because it's all double blind, are like, you know, telling stories of what happens to the soul in the world between the worlds. So, and then from that, I put together exactly what the process is of the soul reincarnating into the body, which is all helium. What happens with the helium patient is they're kind of stuck somewhere along that way, that the process hasn't finished. It could be, for instance, a patient whose parents are fighting, there's a lot of maybe violence at home, you know, and the soul kind of feels reluctant to come into the body. Actually, every soul is reluctant to come into the body, but they do, they jump and they land in somebody's uterus. But some of them don't make the jump, and then they'll be stuck in a helium situation. Of course, that is, I'm making it simplistic and easy, but I'm giving you an insight to what is that is about. And I developed this idea in the helium book, going from the very physical concrete thing, concrete pathology, you know, headaches and whatever, to the emotional side. But this is beyond the emotional side. I go, there's a side in remedies that is beyond just emotional essences, that is about the structure, the inner structure, and the spiritual nature of the remedies. Now, if you go into neon, you kind of get into the next stage. What happens when the soul does enter into the body? And what happens if it gets stuck at that very first stage of entering the body? Where it's stuck in a kind of babyhood, you know, newborn. Neon means new, actually. So it's like a newborn baby that remains two-dimensional, superficial, you know, just never growing up, never standing on its own two feet. It could be like a person who's very naive. You know, very childish in their character, sees things as, you know, superficially, doesn't go deeper, or even as we have found in, for instance, drug addiction, where all there is itch and, you know, the itch and the drug, the itch and the scratch, the itchy scratchy show. These are just, you know, a few little snippets out of neon. It's a huge, big remedy with a lot of facets to it. But I'm trying to show how the noble gases show these stages in life. It's like when you're typing a sentence in a typewriter and you reach the last one and you press enter. That's where the noble gas is. And then argon is that stage of youth where, you know, you're coming into maturity, you're developing another dimension, you're standing on your own two feet, you start to relate to other people, you develop a shadow side, because you've got three dimensions now, and it becomes more complex, but it's often suitable in, you know, the kind of situation where people get stuck in a perfect childhood or try to preserve their perfect childhood or youth, but can't move on from there. And you can't cling on to it forever. So, you know, let me give you an example. I spoke together to previously how every chemical interaction is trying to be like the noble gas. Now, you are familiar with the remedy Natrum Muriaticum Nat Mor, and you know it as a remedy for love, disappointment, for instance, or grief. Natrum is the first element in that period, number 11, and Muriaticum Chlor is number 17. It's the last one before argon. So the two of them, 17 and 11, want to combine to be like argon. That's what they're trying to do. So they combine and they make salt. So salt is a good remedy for unrequited love, for love that is never totally fulfilled itself, you know, falling in love with somebody unattainable for whatever reason, or one side wanted, the other side didn't want, and then there's a broken heart. But argon is the perfection of that. So argon would be a remedy I would use when there was a perfect love that was perfectly right, perfectly fulfilled, maybe a puppy love or something like that, where everything was wonderful, then it got cut off, and, you know, then the people are trying to hold on to it and preserve it for the rest of their life, or preserve that perfect 18-year-old experience, but you can't do it because you're growing up, and you need a mortgage and a job and whatever. So that's how it devolves, and it then evolves into krypton and xenon in the same way, and into radon. Each one a new phase of life, each one a new dimension, each one correlating to another day of creation. For instance, argon to the third day where God created the trees and the sea and, you know, and land and separated. There's a one-to-one very precise correlation. I'm just scanning it briefly now. That's the idea, and for me it's a really fascinating journey, and you know, but I'll tell you, you know, something that when I wrote Helium and I wanted to publish the noble gases, and I approached some homeopathic publishers, they all said, yeah, very interesting, but we don't want one remedy in a book. We want many remedies. So put all the noble gases together. Now, I told you my philosophy last time, which is I do everything the long and proper way. And to do that, to shorten it, to concentrate each one of these noble gases into one book is not my aim. So therefore, I stuck it out and I do one book per remedy. And it seems like, wow, you know, you have other books which you have 100 remedies in it. But that's not the idea. In the book, I also teach you how to take a proofing and turn it into a whole remedy picture, stage by stage by stage, you know, and also how to crack a remedy to understand it deeply. And if you can learn that, then you can learn how to crack a patient's case as well in the deepest possible way. So again, I'm not interested in the shortcuts. I'm interested in doing it the long, proper way. That's
you
it.
Know, I must say that was just, that was an amazing, that was a lesson, wasn't it? That was a webinar. I forgot I was actually hosting the podcast for a minute. But Jeremy, you've so eloquently and so beautifully actually just explained, because I held up the periodic table and it's just in line of sight, how you've so eloquently basically explained the periodic table and the fact that these gases are the perfection of everything else that precedes it. And I'm really fascinated by this, because the question that comes to mind, and although I dare I ask, do we need to then necessarily refer to the remedies preceding the noble gases.
Can you do for sure, because the noble gas will just be one image of a person who's stuck in that perfect moment. And by the way, that perfection has another side to it, because the noble gases have two names, noble and inert. And inert means that you can fall into a kind of indifference, not caring, isolation, not communicating with that kind of perfection, OCD, for instance, or anything like that. You know, everything has to be just right. But other people might be stuck in aurum. And, you know, that's not a noble gas, but they're just on the journey climbing the mountain. And boom, suddenly they got frozen in place, and they got frozen in aurum, or they got frozen in calcium, or they got frozen in argentum. So, you know, we need all those remedies. I, you know, made it a mission to prove as many remedies from the periodic table as I can, and I've probably done, other than the noble gases, about another 10 altogether, you know, maybe 20 remedies in the periodic table. I can't do them all, but I think I've contributed my bit, because I also, you know, I've proved remedies from the, you know, other kingdoms as well, just out of interest. Yeah.
So
you need them all.
Okay, that taken. But
I'll tell you, if we come just to the other side of that coin, and here's a dilemma, you know. In 1982, when I did my first proving of Scorpion, people weren't doing provings for quite a time, you know. There weren't many happening, maybe the odd one here or there, but not much. Kind of stopped after Herring, Kent, few others. So there was a lot of silence in provings. And I jumped into it, not knowing anything, and started it again. And then I wrote my book on the provings, you know, the dynamics and methodology of provings. And a lot of people followed on and did a lot of wonderful provings. But what happens if you have too many provings? You see, if you don't have enough, you've got a problem. I mean, I have remedies that I proved that it would be difficult to fully cure the patient if I hadn't proved it for me. Like, I'm just thinking of, you know, any remedy I've had recently. Okay, yesterday I had a dose of chocolate, a case of chocolate. I ate my chocolate too, but I had somebody came to me with vaccination damage, and it turned out to be chocolate. Now, you know, before I had it, it would be difficult. It would be possible, but more difficult to cure them. Now I see straight away this is a case of chocolate with all the characteristics of it. What happens when you get to 10,000, 20,000 provings, and then it becomes much more difficult to actually find the remedy because you've got so many? So there's a delicate balance here, and with the development of much more provings, people have had to develop ways to circumnavigate, you know, to work around having a lot of provings.
But that goes, the question that arises then is that with the provings certainly that you've done, and some of the newer provings that are also being done around the world, that should not stop though, should it, that process, because it's progress, or have we done enough and we should wait a bit and maybe look ahead and use what
maybe
we have?
Maybe it's time to consolidate a bit. Look, if there's a good quality proving, that's fine, because you'll be able to use it. A lot of provings are mediocre or poor quality, and there's criteria for that, you know, how to tell if it's good or not, you know, what kind of quality it is. And then they just kind of clog up the repertories and materia medica, but there's nothing you can, it's very difficult to use it. It's just a bunch of symptoms, and they haven't, the people haven't taught it, lectured it, put it together, made a book out of it, shown cases. They've just did the proving, collected the symptoms, and thrown it at the repertory. So that kind of thing is kind of a little bit problematic. So it needs to be done properly, collated properly, put together properly. And at the same time, we need to find ways deal with it, you know, how to do it more efficiently. One of those ways, you know, for myself struggling with that issue is to develop the QREP. That was a way to deal with, you know, more provings.
Which actually aptly does take us on to QREP, because as a user of QREP, firstly, thank you. I think it's really extremely productive as a tool and as a way to repertorize. But what fascinated me is, and I'm actually going to open it during the podcast. So you have a number of mental qualities, and these include, they're compartmentalized for ease. So ambition, animals, big ego, control, guilt, low self-esteem, failure, divided and double. But within that, what caught my attention was actually spiders and snakes and insects. And spiders, you've written, suitable for any patient where spider-related issues are a theme of the case. Why, with the other qualities, why were those three so important to include? Are they that big of a is that manifestation in
what happens? You know, I mean, I put the QREP together for a lot of reasons. I did it for myself. I did it because I needed it. And you know, if somebody else had done it, I'd be very happy. But nobody did it, or nobody did it in the kind of standard that, you know, I like. So, you know, because it's so much work. I mean, a rubric like that, one rubric takes us months to put together, you know. So, but one of the reasons I did it, this is just only one reason, that a patient would come and say, I have a fear of snakes and dreams of snakes, and sometimes I even think I see snakes. So now you're going to have to say, okay, which one will I choose? Well, I can't choose either one of them because, you know, that's partial. If I put together, if I just repertorize the three of them, I'm just going to get a few remedies. The only real way to deal with it is to combine them into one rubric. I must have done that a million times, you know, combining all the snake, but then you're not easily going to find all the snake rubrics, because there are all kinds of little hidden ones in there that you're not noticing or you don't know about. So, you know, I'd sit there repertorizing individual patient and combining all the spider rubrics, but it's a lot of work every time. And then you don't even have the snake remedies or the spider remedies in there, meaning, you know, you it might not appear, like python might not be in dreams of snakes or delusion of snakes. So you want that in as well, because the aim of the QREP is to throw a wide net and to catch as many remedies as possible. So, you know, to do it once properly and then save yourself having to do it every time, that was the aim of the game. You know, so that if you just have somebody who has some, let's say, fear of insects and dreams of insects and whatever, you know, they had a fright from an insect or something like that, I do it one time, and then all you have to do is choose that rubric, and you don't have to go searching the repertory, and you know there's a 99% certainty that the best remedy is in there. That was the idea. But I'll be honest with you here. These rubrics, like insects, spiders, and snakes or whatever, those are the low-hanging fruit. Now, if you take a rubric like, you know, that's more emotionally complex than that, let's say failure, or, for instance, duty and responsibility, those are much more difficult and time-consuming to do, because you have a lot of, you know, obscure rubrics, and you really have to comb the repertory and the remedies, the materia medica, and new provings to find them. It, you know, if I take a rubric here, opinion of others, which you commonly, you know, when people are over-concerned what others think about them, I have 271 remedies, whereas, you know, if I go to the conventional repertory and I'm looking up now, and you know, that would be fear, opinion of others, here it is 21 remedies, so 271 compared to 21. That means, you know, I combed the materia medicas, I combed the repertory, looking for anything that can, for instance, there might be a rubric, delusion is not appreciated. There might be a rubric, aversion to people looking at him, or whatever it is, you know, that's a lot, much more work than doing spiders or snakes.
But they are actually, I must say, having used Q-Rep for chronic cases, I find they really work very well. And I've noticed one thing, that Aurum is, is, you know, it's there in nearly all of those subheadings. It's a very powerful and very, quite an extravagant remedy, isn't it, as such? It covers a lot of issues.
It's a polycrest, and partly because that's its nature, gold, you know, it's something that is, you know, intrinsic to human nature, but on the other hand, you know, it's very well proved. So you get remedies that are well proved, and you get remedies that are less well proved or less clinically verified. So therefore, you know, they will be less represented. But yes, Aurum is in a lot of the Q-Rep rubrics, and you know, that's partly the nature of the remedy. But it won't be in all of them, for instance, you know, it will be missing some.
Yes. Yes, but it caught my attention because, but it also shows, like you've just so wonderfully said, it's a very well proven remedy, and its uses are multifaceted, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. That's what it means, you know, to be a polycrest. That, you know, it's a remedy is well represented. But you know, I'm looking at it now. You know, it's not appearing in spiders, for instance. You know, so that is, or I'm looking what else, I don't see it appearing in the rubric home. Oh, it is in home, but you know, there's a few rubrics that it doesn't appear in.
But I would like to say thank you from the whole, probably the homeopathic community, because that's such a useful repertory tool that you've, and I know how much, I mean, I don't know, but I can well imagine the thousands of hours that and the years that you spent putting it together. But it works, and thank you for that.
It works. I'll tell you what the trick is, why it's so good. It's much better than I ever thought, and I use it in every case, and I come up with better, smaller remedies, more precise remedies. The thing is, it simplifies homeopathy because, you know, instead of looking for, like, music, aversion music, desire music, loves to dance, you know, doesn't like the piano, whatever, all those little rubrics, you just know that if you're taking music, you're safe. Now, there's a lot of remedies in music, let's say 200 plus, but the magic of the Q-Rep is you put three rubrics together and you just put the remedy. Then all you need is one good general or physical, and you've narrowed it down.
Jeremy, I was going to ask you about Beryl and Carol. I will let the master speak and explain, but do tell about Beryl and Carol. And it's actually, if you want to do find out more anyway, it's at berylandcarol.org.
Yep. And this is, it makes me very happy to talk about it, you know, because I love that book, and people who read love it. So, yeah, so I just had a review published today, which, you know, gave it 5 out of 5 perfect book, and they raved about it as a book for all ages, and that's what it is. So I have 6-year-olds who love it and read it again and again, and I have 82-year-olds who love it and read it again and again. It's just that kind of really fun book with a message to read. The reason I wrote it, I think, is because it started off as many children's books do, as a story I told my kids, and especially, you know, I've got 6 kids and 4 girls, and I told it to them when they were little, over many, many years, so I kind of developed it carefully. And it was too good a story not to write for me. So I wrote it, but hidden inside are many secret messages, you know, many homeopathic clues as to remedies, as to people, as to remedy pictures, as to homeopathic history. And it's a book that actually subliminally promotes homeopathy. So, you know, if your kid will read it and they don't know anything about homeopathy, they're going to come out liking homeopathy, you know, without me pushing it down their throats. It's just in there, kind of in a subtle way. And it's a fun adventure book, but, you know, partly the message that is hidden inside is a message of, you know, the qualities that one needs to achieve nobility. And here, you know, we're back to the noble gases, because it's the book is called The Noble Adventures of Beryl and Carol. And to achieve this nobility, what you need is integrity. You need, you know, perseverance to face difficult challenges, to make the right choices, you know, and to often go the difficult way, but the right way. And this is a message I'm sending to kids, you know, which is, you know, about making those right decisions when they, even if they're more difficult. But I believe that this is also the path of the homeopath, because, you know, a homeopath has not chosen the easy way. To choose the easy way is to, you know, I don't know what, I'm not saying any profession has its challenges, but, you know, there are many professions where you can make much more money, much more easily, and, you know, and be satisfied, buy your yacht, go skiing, you know, and have two cars and a nice house, and you'll be supposedly happy. A homeopath is somebody that even among the alternative therapies has said, I'm climbing the highest mountain here, because homeopathy is not easy to learn to perfect. It's easy to do first aid, but to become a master homeopath, that is a challenging path which demands the highest level of integrity, nobility, strength, and facing challenges. So these two girls, Beryl and Carol, who start off at a very, you know, difficult situation, they meek, they bullied, they, you know, in trouble. And by just making one decision after another, which are the right decisions, each time that they come to a difficult junction, they grow in strength and nobility. And they get a lot of personal power. And I think that this is a way of the homeopath. And this is a message that, you know, the book, one of the messages the book is sending out, it's sending out a lot of messages, but they all coated in a nice, fun story that I promise you, once you read a couple of chapters, you won't be able to put it down. You know, people read it in one sitting all night. To give you that, to explain what I'm saying, if you don't mind, and, you know, to finish off this nice session, I'll read you a poem from the book.
Oh, that would be perfect.
Okay. This is a poem that Carol's father writes for her, and it's kind of sums up what I just said about the book. So she comes home one night, and her father's left this poem on her bed. And here's how it goes. Every act of strength leads to another act of strength. Every act of weakness leads to another act of weakness. Courage begets courage, fear breeds fear. Small acts generate bigger acts, big acts generate greatness. Facing pain and overcoming difficulties enhances freedom and power. Unexpected solutions are given by heaven as a token of appreciation for honest endeavors, humility, and goodwill. Life spirals up and down, snakes and ladders. At every moment, choose your path. Once decided, don't look back, move on. Gateways will open. At all times, the universe is unfolding as it should. So that's one little snippet from the book.
That really was. Did you write that poem yourself?
I did, because I'm the author, but supposedly
Beautiful.
Carol's father wrote it.
That's beautiful. And what a beautiful way actually to end part two of this two-part special with you, Jeremisha. I'm very grateful for your time and appreciative of the incredible service that you continue to give and you have done, and that you continue to give through HHA, but all the work that we've discussed over these past two episodes. And I know we've only touched upon certain things, but the knowledge is there, and may you continue to help educate people, the future homeopaths as well, continue to do what you're doing so wonderfully well at HHA. And I must say that for those of you interested in that book, I will paste the link again on my socials, and it's a must read. So please go and read The Noble Adventures of Beryl and Carol. Jeremisha, it's been an absolute delight. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I've really enjoyed talking to you and to your wonderful audience, and I wish you all the very best of happiness and health and fulfillment.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Please do support the show by clicking follow on my socials. Remember, the more exposure the podcast receives, the better for homeopathy around the world. You can find me on Instagram by searching for @like_treatslike, and on both Facebook and TikTok by searching for @like_treatslike. So let's promote the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast around the world together. Don't forget to visit me online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast tab. Here you'll be able to see all the guests that have joined me on the show so far. And of course, you can stream on demand the latest episode to your mobile, tablet, or PC. Until next time, stay safe and take care.